Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Welcome, everyone. Today is February 20th, 2013. We are on the line with Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, all the way from India. Hello. Is the sound doing okay?
Yes, perfectly well. How is my sound?
Good. I just had to put up my volume a little bit, and it's wonderful to hear your voice today. And we're going to have a special show in tribute to your parents. For the listeners, if you go to Homeopathy World Community, we have a banner. And click the banner to the Wednesday 10:30 a.m. show. It will take you directly to the page. And I just received a few minutes ago a very lovely video from your dad.
Yeah, Dr. Kasim.
Dr. Kasim. And it's really nice to be able to see him speaking. And I'm just glowing with the idea that people in other parts of the world are listening and appreciating all of the things that we're doing here on Blog Talk Radio and Homeopathy World Community to talk about homeopathy and let people know that there are gentle ways of curative action.
And, exactly. Yes, and what's the quote for today?
I was just looking up today's quote, and the one that I think I'm going to say to myself every day, it's by Mark Twain. It says, "This is the day upon which we are reminded of what we are on the other 364.
Wow.
And it's, I guess you can play with that idea every single day and see what it means to you about what's happening on this day and where we're going in the future and where we've been in the past. And the fact that this day is so important, every single day is important for taking action and doing good in the world.
Exactly. And that is what we are essentially doing with the Homeopathic World Community, especially the Blog Talk Radio shows. We are trying to spread some amount of goodness, whatever we can, a little bit of information. And for our audience, I'm reiterating that this is an educational show. And, of course, we do try to answer your queries. We do try to solve your cases. But at the end of the day, you have to go to a qualified physician and ask your opinion. Am I right?
Absolutely. We need to let people know that this is educational programming, and we're fortunate to be able to do that. I have another little quote. This is one that says, "Dancing makes you smarter." And
wow.
It's been scientifically proven that the only physical activity to offer protection against dementia is frequent dancing. That reading provides 35% reduced risk of dementia, which is pretty high. I think reading is on the top. Bicycling and swimming is zero. Doing crossword puzzles at least 4 days a week is 47%. So that means really using your brain to solve something. And then playing golf is zero, and dancing frequently is the highest one of 76%. and so many people today do have dementia. The study made the suggestion, do it often. Seniors who took dance lessons 4 days a week had a measurably lower risk of dementia than those who did it only once a week. And I kept thinking in my mind, what is it in the dancing that is going to improve your brain function? And to me, dancing is such joy. It is can be spontaneous, but they were explaining that it is almost similar as doing puzzles and also using your intelligence, especially if you're dancing with a partner, because you have to work together. One is leading, one is following. You have to be in the immediacy of the moment, knowing where the person is going to take you and be able to follow. Or
it's actually a concert between two people.
Yes.
And then it becomes a concert between two souls.
Yes, it's just a joyous thought. And the thing about the dancing is, if it is a routine dance, something that you just repeat the steps over and over, it's not the same effect as if you do it creatively and in a new way. I also think that the music must have a lot to do with it. I think music is a universal language, and it stirs the spirit, and that also must be a component in the entire thing about dancing.
Well, how true about dance, but I'm going to repeat the two quotes, which one my dad has given and one the other my mom has given.
Wonderful.
My dad has given me a quote, and he says, it takes as much time to change the world as it takes to change our judgments and opinions of the world, an instant or infinite lifetimes. So you can change your judgment and opinion of the world in an instant, or you may take a lifetime to change those. And the moment you change the opinions and judgments, it changes your life. So that was a quote given to me by my father. And a second quote given to me by my mom was, may I be the clearest possible channel for the highest possible blessings in the world. I should be a channel for the highest possible blessings in the world, and that is healing, which hopefully my parents have taught me to do, and I'm doing it.
You are definitely doing it. It's a beautiful, beautiful quote. Both of them are. It's the way that the world does work, either in an instant or over the long haul, the struggle, the work of a whole lifetime to reach it. And I don't know what the quote is, but there is something that you're not finished with reaching. You never know if you've reached your mission, your goal, until your last breath, really.
Exactly. It's just life is just a travel. But then moments you actually take small goals and try to achieve them, then go to bigger goals and keep on achieving them. I mean, but you still become a channel. You should be a channel as much as possible between the Almighty and the living people.
That's beautiful.
Well, so as I had told you last time that we would be dedicating this program to my father and my mother, whose luckily the birthdays fall. My father's birthday falls on 18th of February, and my mom's birthday is on 22nd of February. And my father, Dr. Kasim Chimthanawala, belongs to a family who are in homeopathy since past 102 years. He did his MBBS, that is allopathic medicine, from Government Medical College, Nagpur, as early as 1968. And then he went to Calcutta, that is a place where a lot of good homeopathy was taught in his times. And he did his post-graduation in dermatology from Calcutta University. He also at the same time did his diploma in tropical medicine from School of Tropical Medicine, Calcutta. And finally, the diploma in homeopathic medicine and surgery from West Bengal Board of Homeopathic Medicine. For the past 4 decades, he has been serving the Society of Nagpur as a homeopathic consultant. He has extensively contributed to the academics of homeopathy. He's been appointed by the Vice Chancellor of Nagpur University on practically all boards pertaining to homeopathy. And He has written 10 books, of which the textbook of Mahaism is one of the gleaming books which he has written. He has authored No Swords, Multiple Crest Remedies. He has authored Case Taking, book on skin. Likewise, 10 books, Calcutta School of Homeopathy. So likewise, many books have been authored by him. And he practices purely classical homeopathy. And whatever I am in homeopathy or even in allopathy, the degrees which I have gained, it is because of his constant inspiration. Even at this point of time, when I have got difficulty with my cases, I discuss cases with him and he always has a good and a viable solution to offer to my patients. So love you, Dad, and a very, very happy birthday to you. But to complete him is also my mom, who in herself is a wonderful human being and a great homeopath. She is one of the first homeopathic obstetrician, not only in central India, but also in India. I have never seen a homeopathic obstetrician. I have seen few homeopathic gynecologists, but not a homeopathic obstetrician. As early as 1983, she established a hospital, that is Shad Homeopathic Hospital Complex and Research Center at Nagpur, and started the Department of Homeopathic Obstetrics and Gynecology. And for past all these years, she has been delivering a great deal to the patients of not only Central India, but throughout the country and abroad, who want to get rid of their ailments in homeopathic gynecology and obstetrics. Both of them established in 1978 an academy called the National Academy of Homeopathy India. And since then, we have started a postgraduate course training and grooming students in the clinical skills required for updation of homeopathy. And it's passed so many years. So many people have been, more than 2,000 people have been benefited by these courses. And of course, today, the entire courses, the summer school and winter school, they both of them, I am heading now. And of course, my parents do support me. But now, along with my wife, I head the entire course. So again, her birthday falls on 22nd of February. Happy birthday, Mom. Happy birthday, Dad. And with this, we start with today's show, and that is the rubric of eruptions from the chapter of chest in the Kent's repertory. We have finished the rubrics of blotches, blisters, boils, desquamating eruptions, eczema, and herpes. When we discussed about the various disorders and the various sub-rubrics, we also discussed the various symptoms which point out to particular remedies like arsenic and syphilinum and herpes, staphylococcygeria or hydrocortile, etc. We also finished a sub-rubric called nodules, and finally we saw about keloids, the pictures. If you can view the PowerPoint presentation, you can see the various keloids on a particular man's chest as well as the back and the shoulder region. And finally, we have come to a sub-rubric which we are going to discuss today extensively, and that is pimples, a very, very common eruption, rather one of the most common eruptions on the skin for all ages, but more so in the reproductive age, and the adults, moment from the puberty starts in up till 40, 45, 50 years of age, you have got pimples of various types. And I have given 3 photographs, sulfur, pulsatilla and psoriasis photographs from pimples. Now, what is a pimple? So basically, pimple is any eruption on the skin which is papular in nature. Papular means it is firm, elevated above the skin, and generally less than 5 centimeters. But it contains, instead of water, it contains a cheesy material which is called as a sebum. And that is the only difference between a pimple and a papule. Now, pimples can be because of various types. It can be acne. Now, acne are generally connoted with pimples appearing at puberty or because of hormonal changes. So that is acne, and the only drug given here is Baritacab. Pimples can be angry, pimples can bleed easily, and the drug is Cystiscan. Of course, we are going to study in details, but I'm just enumerating them. Pimples can be burned. Normally, pimples don't burn. But if you have a burning around the pimples, then you have got three remedies, Agaricus, Bovista, and Staphylococcus, all given in one mark. Elevated pimples. Now, basically, pimples are elevated above the skin. But if you have got a pimple bigger than the normal size, now, it's a very difficult proposition to answer what is the normal size of that particular patient. But a bigger pimple, then you can use this rubric, elevated. We are going to study the remedy Valerina. Then, pimples, if they are flattened in nature, normally pimples are elevated, but if you have a flat pimple, a hard pimple, indolent pimple means a pimple which is persistent for a very long time. It is not going whatever you try upon. So that is called indolent pimple. Then pimple which can itch, a painful pimple which bleeds easily, Cystiscan again, pointed with whitish semi-transparent vesicles on. Now this pimple which is pointed with whitish semi-transparent vesicle on, the drug given is Bryonia. You can connote this with Molluscum contagiosum. Molluscum contagiosum is a papular, it's a viral infection. It has a favorite site occur on the face, but it also occurs on the chest. We are actually talking about chest eruptions and pimples. So pimples are occurring on the chest. We are not talking about pimples on the face. So if you have got pointed with whitish semi-transparent vesicles on a pimple, then it is generally a molluscum contagiosum. And molluscum are contagious in nature. That means they spread. And secondly, they are painless in nature. Then you can have red pimples, white pimples, what we call as white heads. And over a period of time, if the white heads are not taken care of or they remain, then because of the dust accumulating on the white heads, they become black heads. So they can be called as black comedomes or white comedomes. So this was everything about pimples. Now, let us go into some depth about certain remedies for pimples. Of course, I cannot take all the remedies. There are about 50-60 remedies mentioned. But certain remedies which have specialized type of pimples and are used very often clinically in our practice, that's what I'm going to take. You name the pimple and the first remedy that comes to mind is Antum Crude. And Antum Crude generally are painless pimples. They have yellow crusted pimples on the cheeks and chin, especially the beard area, but also on the chest. And they appear as sallow, haggard, small honey-colored granules. That means there's slight element of pus in the pimples. That gives it a sallow or a haggard, yellow-colored crust. But they're very good to heal, very fast to heal, and Antum Crude is one of the very, very good remedies when the pimples appear at different parts or different sites. Every eruption coming is at a different place. Initially, it may come on the right side below the nipple. The other time, it can come in the center of the chest. The third time, it can come on the near the axillary region. So, the eruptions change places, and this is very characteristic of Antum Crude, and they keep on coming. So Antum Crude can be used for such types of pimples. We have seen the remedy Cystiscan, a very, very beautiful remedy, but unfortunately very less used remedy as far as pimples are concerned. And the characteristic of Cystiscan, you have got pimples that bleed easily and they are painful. So, itching and burning in small, painful pimples. Painful pimples are very, very small. Pinhead or more than pinhead, such is the small size of the Cystiscan pimple. Acneiform eruptions appear suddenly after drugs. Now, this is very common in today's times. acneiform eruptions appear suddenly after drugs. A person has been taking certain drugs like steroids or anti-cancer agents, steroids for asthma, steroids for arthritis, and in 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks time, the patient starts developing pimples, and those pimples are itching and burning. They are small, they are multiple, they, irrespective of the face, the place of location, they may appear on the face, they may appear on the back, the upper back and the chest, which is one of the favorite areas. So here you can use Cystiscan. Today morning, in fact, I had a patient who has developed multiple pimples. He is a young 19 years old male, and he had gone for playing football. And while playing football for about, say, 3.5 to 4 hours, he was exposed to sun for quite a long time. And he started developing a pimple type of eruptions. And initially, he did not know what it is. Over a period of time, he understood that it was because of sun exposure. He is getting numerous pimples which were itching and burning, and they were really painful. So he came to us, and this today itself I had prescribed to Cystiscan. Cystiscan in 30 potency twice a day for 3 to 4 days, and the pimples would be gone. Then you can have pimples because of chemicals. Many people working for, they are building roads and they are working with tar. Then coal mines, then benzene. Wherever such chemicals are used, or iron ore factories, people handling alloys, such people are more prone for developing such Cystiscan type of small painful pimples. And the favorite place again becomes the thorax as well as the back. So this is Cystiscan pimple. Then, of course, the wonderful drug arsenic alb. Generally, you don't prescribe arsenic alb in pimples, but since it's mentioned, then it's my duty to tell you what arsenic alb pimple would be like. A pimple of arsenic alb would be very hard in consistency, indurated at base. That means the base would be very soggy and soft, and with pustules at the apex. So it will be hard in the middle, pus at the apex, and indurated at the base. This is a typical arsenic alb pimple. Generally, arsenic alb pimples are few in nature, not multiple in nature, few in nature. Then we have got borax, another remedy which is not thought of pimples for pimples, that is borax. Here you have a swollen face with pimples on the nose and lips, but at the same time you can also get in the chest, on the chest. The skin basically is very unhealthy, and moment you get a pimple, it does not heal, rather it festers. Long time to heal. A patient would say that, doc, I've got about 2 or 3 boils. He would not refer them to them as pimples, but he would say, I've got 2 or 3 boils, and I don't have much pain, but they're white in color, and they're not going. So do you have something to worry about, or do you have some medications? Yes, we do have borax. And borax needs to be given in very low potencies, and a few doses would take care of this whitish pimples, but they are festering and non-healing pimples. Then we have got a slightly rarer remedy, cinnabaris. One would think of cinnabaris for sexually transmitted diseases, for eruptions or moist eruptions on the genitalia, but you can also think of this remedy wherein if you want to deal with pimples on the chest. Red pimples, violent itching and pricking pain the whole day. The pimples appear in clusters and they do not bleed. Of course, I have not used cinnabaris ever for pimples, but then this is a big book picture of cinnabaris is C-I-N-N-A-B-A-R-I-S, cinnabaris. C-I-N-N-A-B-A-R-I-S, cinnabaris. Red pimples, violent itching, pricking pain the whole day. Pimples appear in clusters and they do not bleed. Another remedy that is mentioned in the general group of remedies for pimples is Kalikarb. Basically, Kalikarb has a sensitive, dry skin. And any eruption, forget about pimples, but any eruptions, it causes extreme burning in and around the pimples. Now, normally burning is not attributed to Kalikarb, but the pimples of Kalikarb, they burn. A very, very frequently used remedy for pimples is Rustox. And Rustox is a master remedy for acne rosacea. That means rose-colored acne-form eruptions or rose-colored pimples. As we all know, it is accompanied with dry, hot skin. There is itching in the hairy parts of the chest. And Rustox produces acne in the hairy parts of chest. So those males who have got lots of hair or profuse hair on the chest, they tend to develop pimples which become red in color. They are dry, hot, and they itch, but they do not pain. Sensitive to cold air, and these eruptions increase with the intake of milk. So, more the milk you take, more the number of acne in Rustox increase. So, Rustox is indicated for such type of acne rosacea. Another remedy which you hardly ever talk about as far as pimples are concerned, and that is magnesium muraticum. But a very, very interesting, although I did have a case, and that's why I took up this remedy also. Whenever people who are living on the plains, they go for the holidays or they go to the seaside, and after sea bathing, they start seeing that the entire skin, or particularly of the chest, is covered with small pimples or pimple-shaped eruptions. Initially, they appear on the forehead and they discharge a pale yellow pus. Along with this, the patients complain of concurrent indigestion, abdominal bloating, and constipation. These pimples are very itchy pimples, and they cause a particular type of discomfort. That is itch at night or in warm room. And even after the person has left the seashore and come back to his or her town, then every menses, these eruptions come around. So this is a magmure pimple or a magmure type of eruption. Again, I repeat, pimples appearing in people visiting the seaside or after sea bathing appear especially on the forehead, but also on the chest, discharging a pale yellow pus. The patients generally complain of concurrent indigestion, bloating of abdomen, and constipation. The eruptions itch at night or in a warm room and appear before every menses thereafter. You need to give magnesium muraticum in 200 potency. You may repeat it after a month or at the most 2 months, and this condition can be easily taken care of. This recurrency after every menses of pimples can definitely be taken care of.
Do we think of this remedy for cramps or other kinds of symptoms during the menstruation?
We think of magnesium muraticum for cramps and colic in the abdomen, along with constipation and menstrual colic also, yes. But since we were talking about pimples, so I did not focus much on those items. Then we have got another wonderful remedy which has been mentioned here time and again in all these rubrics, and that is Miserium. Miserium, like its classical eruption, have got red pimples that ooze an acrid, gluey moisture. Red pimples that ooze an acrid, gluey moisture that forms a thick crust and pus beneath. So there's a thick crust above and a pus beneath, and that is how a pimple may appear. It's a pussy pimple. If the acne is infected with the staphylococci, then it turns into a deep, hard, painful ulcer. Many times, the pimples, young girls and boys have a tendency to break open those pimples with their fingers. And if they keep on doing it repeatedly, the acne becomes infected with staphylococci. And if the moment does so, then it turns the pimple into a deep, hard, painful ulcer, which heals with difficulty. And once it heals, it leaves a scar on the affected site. So, if there is a tendency of scar formation with pimples whether on the face, whether on the chest, whether on the back, then do think of mesarium. Okay?
Yes, very, very
another
good.
Remedy.
This is something that young people would love to learn about.
Yeah, surely.
But how do we stop them from touching their face?
You can't stop. It's actually a reaction. It's a reaction which is not prime because they have never seen such things. And the only thing which is primarily important for them is looking beautiful or looking handsome. And mm-hmm. the pimple spoils that thing. But then pimple is also an indication that hormones are at play, the sex hormones at play, androgens are at play. So you can't actually do much about it other than let it come, let it eliminate, and then it will take care of. But still, that is much easier said than done. 90% of youngsters would come. They would want medicines wherever that pimple may. The pimple has to go, A, and B, if the pimple comes, it should not leave a scar. So mesarium is one of wonderful remedies. Mesarium can be used in low potencies, 3 or at the most 6. You can repeat it them morning, evening, and many physicians, many homeopaths also give mesarium in tincture form for face wash. I mean, before and after, twice a day, you can have a face wash with mesarium liquid along with water, and that too helps in relieving this these pimples. Then another remedy which is given only in one mark, and that is squilla. Now, you don't think of squilla for pimples at all. I mean, although it is given, but one would never even refer to it. But one peculiar thing with squilla is the pimples occurring or pimples requiring squilla occur in older people or patients suffering from long-standing bronchopneumonia, long-standing renal failure, diabetes or congestive cardiac failure. And these pimples specifically occur on the chest. They are small, red, pricking pain, mild itching and burning, but generally not so. They are scattered on the back and chest, along with very offensive sweating in the armpits. The entire skin sweats, and the sweat is quite offensive. And these resemble elevated spider nevi. Now, spider nevi are small reddish elevations on the chest, and they signify some liver disorder. They also signify a deep-rooted disorder if you have got bronchopneumonia, renal failure, diabetes, and congestive cardiac failure, or liver failure. And squilla is known to get rid of those pimples if at all the patient is worried about it. Of course, squilla is the master remedy for long-standing bronchopneumonia, even for renal failure. It's an excellent diuretic. For diabetes, again, a very, very good remedy, wherein the main presentation feature of diabetes is nocturia or uncontrolled urination during the day, and congestive cardiac failure, wherein you want diuresis, you want the puffiness to decrease, you use squilla. So squilla is a remedy. Of course, it also alleviates these small red pimples with pricking pain. Then we have another remedy, strontium carb. Again, a remedy which is not discussed as in the context of pimples, yet it has been given here. And in strontium carb, you have got lots of small eruptions, which are again red, but they are moist. Whenever you touch them, you feel moist. They are not dry, as in other drugs. They are quite moist. And the patient says, there are only few, 1, 2, at the max 3. And the patient says that, they burn, but still wants to apply wants to take hot water baths. There's a burning heat in those pimples, and yet the patient is ameliorated with hot water baths, exposing to warm sunshine or completely covering the chest. Slight draft of air or cold air, even the fan air, is intolerable, and it causes a great discomfort, a great burning in those eruptions. A very, very peculiar feature, burning heat ameliorated by hot water baths or ameliorated by warm sunshine or completely covering the chest. Wherever you get such type of eruptions, may be pimples, may not be pimples, any other type of eruptions you get, the drug still remains strontium carb. Then, another remedy you may think, but it's hydrocortile asiatica. Hydrocortile, H-Y-D-R-O-C-O-T-Y-L-E, asiatica, A-S-I-A-T-I-C-A, or commonly even in India, we call it Indian pennywort. And in this remedy, basically, it is a remedy we extensively used in India for a disease which is very much which was prevalent in India. Nowadays, we see less of patients, and that is leprosy or Hansen's disease. But in today's time, it's a wonderful, wonderful remedy for an autoimmune disease called psoriasis. So hydrocortile, you can have pimples or pustules on the chest with increased sweating. It's a prime remedy for psoriasis. And they start with small pustules which dry up, and they're predominantly on the trunk and limbs. Then the epidermis thickens, and there is exfoliation of scales with intolerable itching, and especially of soles. Again, I repeat, hydrocortile is a master remedy. The eruptions begin as pustules on the chest. Initially, pimples, the pimples turn to pustules. The pustules, they dry up. They're predominantly there on the trunk and the limbs. Then the epidermis starts thickening up. The thickened epidermis causes exfoliation of scales. And moment the exfoliation starts, there's intolerable itching, especially if it is near the soles. But then since we're talking about chest, it is equally true for chest as well.
I can ask if anybody in the chat room has a comment. You're welcome to write something down in there. If you just want to say that you're listening and to keep going, anything, feedback is always wonderful. We also have the call in, if you're in the United States, to 347-945-6956, or click that blue Skype button, and I'll look for you as a caller.
And the remedy which is mentioned about two or three times, and in as far as pimples are concerned, and that is Valerina, a very, very good remedy. Valerina has got dry skin, and when you touch the skin of that person, it is generally warm to touch. And it is a hysterical remedy, so everything is oversensitive. The entire person, the entire Valerina patient is oversensitive. And there's always pain around the area of pimple. The pimple may be very small, but moment you touch the pimple or moment a draught of air, open air touches the pimple, there is exaggerated amount of pain. And if this happens, then Valerina may be used.
Do they say something?
The characteristic of Valerina again is eruptions come and go and it changes places. Pimples are at first red and confluent and then become white and hard. So this is characteristic of this drug. In fact, in the books it is written, France from Germany, he wrote, it was a custom among the ladies and young girls in Germany to take Valerine almost as frequently as coffee. These women folk were generally of a nervous temperament. The sexual precociousity in the form of acne was well marked. There is scarcely a remedy which communicates its primary as well as its secondary action to the organism with more intensity than Valerina. I mean, how true about the drug? The entire gist of this remedy has been captured by France. It's essentially a nervous remedy. You can liken it to other remedies like pulsatilla. You can liken it to ignatia. All these females or these girls specifically of a nervous temperament, they, whenever they get even a small pimple, and that pimple, they become very oversensitive mentally as well as physically. Unnecessary, there is great amount of hue and cry because of the pain around that pimple. They don't even touch it. They don't allow any draught of open air. Since we are talking about the eruptions on the chest, yes, these can appear on the chest other than the face. And if other drugs do not work, valeriana may be the remedy of choice.
And do you say also by tincture on the face or in the low potency?
Yeah. Even in low potency, you can give. It definitely decreases the sensitivity, overall sensitivity of the patient if you give in potency form. For example, if we give it in 200 or 1 m potency, depending upon the case, overall the hypersensitivity of the patient decreases and the patient begins to accept that she or even he is in a state that he or she may get a pimple, and it's not nothing great about it, because such people get only one or two pimples, but they make a big hue and cry of about the entire issue. So valeriana is basically a hysterical remedy both for males and females, and today in this fashion conscious male world, metrosexual males, you can use this remedy as effectively in females as in males. Then I have another rubric to discuss about, and that is pustule. And I have given about 3 to 4 remedies. One is silicea, wherein you have got very hard and painful but yellow colored pustules. I think everyone who knows homeopathy or bit of homeopathy would know that silicea is the master remedy for all suppurative eruptions, pustules being the prime eruption. Then we have got arsenic, multiple small pustules which are very painful, along with constitutional symptoms. Arsenic generally brings on constitutional symptoms like fever, like malaise, loss of appetite, even sore throat. So pustules, arsenic would be thought of in carbuncles or follicles, that is boils filled with pus or hair roots filled with pus, and are very painful in nature. You would think of arsenic as well. Carbuncles, excellent remedy. Arsenic is the remedy of choice. If you have a case wherein you have got recurrent pustules every monsoon or every rains, whenever the patient is exposed to rains, patient starts getting pustules, then you would think of sulfur. The sulfur has got a greenish colored pus with a reddish base. Initially in the active phase, you would like to give Hipparsulf, and moment the pustule has subsided, the episode is over, then you have to give sulfur to break the recurrency. So sulfur can be used as an emergency remedy or an acute remedy like Hipparsulf, but generally it is preferred to break the recurrency, and Hipparsulf is preferred as an acute remedy. Both of them have the same type of pustules, as you can see in the photograph, which are typical yellow pustule with a red colored base, painful in nature, may or may not have constitutional symptoms like arsenic.
Then I'm sorry, there's a question in the chat.
Yeah.
Maybe I will hold it. It's not related to, it's for ischemic of the, okay, we're going to hold it for another show. I'll ask it next time.
Yeah. Then two other remedies which we don't normally discuss when we're discussing about pustules. One is hydrastis and the other is streptococcinum. Streptococcinum is not given here, but you should add this remedy as 3 marks, because the types of pustules which we see, we'll be discussing it later, but hydrastis is specially indicated in pustule eruptions of chickenpox or infected vesicles of shingles with profuse sweating around the eruptions and high fever. When we are dealing as doctors, when we are dealing with patients who are immunocompromised, maybe because of HIV, maybe because of overuse of steroids, or other immunosuppressant agents, even cancer, anti-cancer therapy, therein we need to use effectively the drug hydrastis, because chickenpox nowadays is not only common in young children less than 3 years, which initially it was, but nowadays a lot of adults also we see of chickenpox. In fact, this point of time, one girl aged 23 years is admitted at my hospital with chickenpox. 23 years old and the entire body is covered with chickenpox, and it's about 7 days. Normally, it takes only 3 days for the chickenpox vesicles or pustules to disappear. It takes 3 days of fever, high-grade fever and upper respiratory tract infection. Then another 3 days of vesicles and pustules of varying forms. And so by 6-7 days, you appear. But it's already 7 days and the eruptions are still there and high fever is still there. So we have used hydrastis, and she is presently on hydrastis 6 every 2 hourly, and she's doing well. She was admitted today morning at 11:30, and she's still there. So we do get such cases, and hydrastis being a very, very uncommon remedy, don't think of hydrastis and pus. Whenever we think of hydrastis, it is always in the form of its typical discharge, that is the thick ropey discharge. But then, ladies and gentlemen, please think of hydrastis also as a remedy of choice for pustules. Many people must have heard about cancer of the skin. And there is one peculiar cancer which is called as a basal cell cancer. Now, this basal cell cancer can occur anywhere, but it has got some favorite sites. One favorite site is near around the eye. The other favorite site is near the ears. And another site would be somewhere around the nape of the neck or the chest. So, this basal cell cancer, I should reiterate the anatomy of the skin. We have got 5 layers of the skin, and below which is the dermis. So the stratum basale, or the most basic, the basal layer, from therein a cancer develops, and that's called basal cell carcinoma, basal cell cancer. And it starts initially as a vesicle, which slowly turns into a pustule, and it bursts to form an ulcer. And this ulcer does not heal. And when you have such type of case, when you confirm that it's a basal cell cancer, then it's worthwhile to prescribe hydrastis and skin cancers, especially of this type. Not only this, suppose a patient comes to you, he or she has had a skin cancer which has been operated or surgical excision has been done, but has recurred at the same place or place near than that, still hydrastis remains the drug of choice for skin cancers which recur after surgical excision. Since we are talking about pustule and hydrastis, I have gone a bit ahead and extended the use of hydrastis in skin. Very, very few people use hydrastis as a remedy for skin. And with the growing amount of skin cancers these days, particularly in countries like Australia, where you have high rates of skin cancers, even places in India like Andaman and Nicobar Islands, and other places, I don't know where skin cancers are too much prevalent, but wherever they are, please use the drug hydrastis. They give very good results. And we do have, I don't have, but my father has treated case of skin cancer with hydrastis. It's a long time. I exactly don't remember the case, but it's 10 years ago. And I remember that the case of basal cell carcinoma in about 31 years old male, and he was a school teacher, and he had got basal cell carcinoma near the lobule of the right ear. And I still do not recollect the basis why hydrastis was given, but I know for sure that that cancer went away. Then, talking about pustules, a remedy which I said that you should keep in mind nowadays, and that is streptococcinum. streptococcinum, streptococcinum, a wonderful remedy Now, where would you like to use the streptococcus? Streptococci or streptococcinum? The pustules erupt around the hair shaft with loss of hair. Cellulitis with edema of the affected parts. The pustules are very painful, non-healing, and generally again in immune-compromised hosts. Again, this becomes very important, particularly in today's times when we have got loads and loads of diabetes, and India being the world capital of diabetes, you get such type of pustules around the hair follicles or hair shaft. And moment the pus is formed or the pustule is formed, the hair around the shaft breaks open. Slowly and steadily, if it is not taken care of, then you have got cellulitis. That means the entire patch of the skin feels filled with pus. You don't call it an abscess, you call it cellulitis. And there's gross edema, and God forbid, it can spread to the blood, and if it does so, then you have got septicemia. Unfortunately, the allopathic management for such cases, they require very high-grade antibiotics. And very high-grade antibiotics in third world countries means high prices. So, we should use streptococcinum as early as possible. Generally, the potency which we use with is 0/1. If I have a case, I'm sure of it that the person is going in, patient is diabetic, the sugar levels are uncontrolled, and it's going to take some time for the sugar levels to be controlled. But I know that the infection is going to spread around, cellulitis is there. I would prefer streptococcinum as the drug of choice even before belladonna or heparsulf, so that my patient does not go in for cellulitis, my patient does not go in for septicemia, and the entire hospital stay is minimized and the patient is free of the disorders. Then, a remedy which is again very few people know about these remedies. Two different families, and the drug is Juglans cinerea, JUGLANS, Juglans cinerea and Juglans regia, REGIA, Juglans cinerea and Juglans regia. They are different remedies, the provings are different, but as far as the eruptions or the pustules are concerned, both of them are very, very effective remedies when you have eczema, a moist oozing eczema in the form of pustules, particularly contact dermatitis. If you have worn leather slippers, and after wearing those leather slippers for 1 day, 2 day, or leather shoes for 1 day, 2 day without socks, you start noticing multiple eruptions on your toes or on the legs, and these eruptions turn pustular with a scarlet flushing around the base, then you need to use not heparsulf or not any other remedy. You need to use Juglans cinerea. It has to be used in mother tincture at the most 6 potency, few repetitions, and the eczema, actually the entire pus comes out. A rare remedy, but a wonderful remedy if you have got such a condition. Eczema starting with pustules. It's a dermatitis starting with pustules with scarlet flushing around the base. Okay?
Very good. Very good.
So, and I wanted to complete rash, but then the time has already come to an end.
Oh my goodness, that was very, very quick. I can't believe how fast an hour went today. I want to let folks know, because I did not have the link onto the presentation, the handout, and so I wanted to provide that. I will put it in the chat for those who are listening, we have a good number of people listening, and you can, there's a link to last week's show on Homeopathy World Community that has a link to the PDF handout. And where do we go next week? Or,
well,
yeah.
Next time we are going to discuss about any very, very interesting topic, that is a rubric, the sub-rubric of eruptions, that is rashes. You get loads of cases of rashes, and there are various colors and lots of things to discuss about rashes. So we are going to discuss about chest eruptions rash next time.
Okay, very good. So thank you so much for today. And
before I end, I want to end with a small poetry, and that is, I walk through those doors of the hospital with pride. Whose life will I save tonight? Someone is waiting for me. Someone is alive today because of my duty. Sometimes we cry because we can't save them all. God sometimes won't let us interfere when He calls. The tear I wipe away with my own hands, the life ending of a gentle old man. The night seems so dark and the morning so bright. The day is so full of tension and worry, yet there is no hurry. So it's for all doctors who serve people, serve humanity, it is for them.
Very nice. We are inspired.
It is the last slide of our presentation. The last slide of the presentation. I'm really just reading those lines. And with this, I end the show. Wish you a very, very great week. And meet you all next time.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Happy birthday to your parents and to all those who are having birthdays in February. And we're going to continue today's show. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the principles and art of cure. I've been reading for many, many months Dr. Herbert Roberts, MD, and his wisdom. It's been very enlightening. So if you want to stick around, hang out with me a little bit longer.
Well, I could have, but then I've got patients even at 10 o'clock at night. I first have to see my patient.
Oh, my gosh.
It's an emergency, actually. And I need to see him. So God bless everyone. And thank you very, very much for all those lovely wishes on the behalf of my dad and my mom. Thank you.
Okay. So everyone, we're going to continue studying together if you want to hang out with me a little bit longer. And also there's going to be a presentation tomorrow on Blog Talk Radio with Alan Phillips and myself starting at 1 p.m. Maybe you'll all, if you're on the other side of the world, you'll probably all be asleep. But I want to also talk about the skin and the mind connection. And I learned a little bit of new information about work being done in that realm in Israel and psychology, and they're awakening to that body-mind connection even more so as eruptions on the skin or things that are coming out on the skin, and they say they're starting to use mind therapy as opposed to drugs and getting really effective cures from it instead of trying to suppress, which is really wonderful news. So we have been talking last time about the dose, and now we're going to be talking about the remedy reaction. So Dr. Roberts says, one of the first things required of a homeopathic physician is that his powers of observation shall be highly developed. His powers of discrimination should be very keenly attuned. First, that he may observe the patient in the analysis of the symptoms and the selection of the remedy. And second, that he may have the keen perception of the import of the symptoms after the remedy has been carefully selected and administered. So we are constantly keeping aware. We don't, for instance, go to the pharmacy, get an injection, a vaccination, and say goodbye, you know, and let that person develop the symptoms over time without even finding out what's happening to the individual. We have to keep tabs on the person, just like Dr. Adil is off to the clinic to take care of an emergency now. After the administration of the simulamum, some action should result. It is upon the development and interpretation of the action of the remedy or the reaction of the vital energy to the remedy that successful prescribing very largely depends. He asks, what are we to expect after the remedy has been administered? According to Hahnemann, the nearer similar the remedy, the more reaction we may expect. And this is Organon Aphorisms 154 and 155. If the exact simulamum is found, we are apt to get a slight aggravation before relief comes. On the other hand, if no changes take place, too long patient waiting is useless, for it is evidence that the simulamum has not been found. But the nearer the symptoms of the patient are to the symptoms of the remedy, the more sure we are to have some reaction. It is for us to determine what the reaction means and to interpret it in the prognostic terms. So this is the artistic and experiential skill of the practitioner. We must be able to listen to the patient's report and from it and our powers of observation to determine what the remedy is doing. We know that when the remedy acts, the symptoms will change in either character or degree. There may be a disappearance of the symptoms, amelioration of the symptoms, or an increase of the symptoms. And these changes are the manifest action of the remedy on the vital energy or vital force. And it is these manifestations we must study. Notice that he keeps referring to the vital energy and the vital force, the spiritual essence of the individual, the energy of the person to react. Among the most common reactions after the remedy has been administered is aggravation or amelioration. Now, there are two types of aggravations, either of which may be manifest. There is the aggravation, which is an aggravation of the disease condition in which the patient grows worse. There may be a very different type of aggravation in which the symptoms are worse, but the patient is growing better. He will say, I feel better, doctor, but such and such symptoms are worse. The aggravation from the disease state is an indication that the patient is growing weaker, and therefore the disease state is growing stronger while his vital energy is ebbing. On the other hand, the aggravation of the symptoms, while the patient reports himself as feeling better, is an indication that his vital force is being set in order, but individual symptoms may show aggravation. We can create some kind of an example. Maybe the eruption is coming out more, yet the person's fever is going down, or their appetite is improving, or mentally their thinking is clearer. We must also observe how the aggravation or amelioration occurs and the duration of these periods. In this connection, we must always bear in mind that is the patient's welfare we are seeking, and it is for us to determine whether he is improving or declining. Sometimes he will say that he is weaker, yet on analysis of the symptoms, you will find this is not true. The story of the symptoms is often of greater importance than the patient's opinion. After we have assured him of the amelioration of his condition and called his attention to the particular instances of improvement, he will be better immediately. And we can think of many examples of people who get their remedy and they see more of an outbreak of their condition, even though they're feeling better overall, but the symptom is a little bit worse. Then they run off and get some kind of a steroid to suppress it again, and everything comes back the way it was. So those are examples. We must also observe how the aggravation or amelioration occurs and the duration of these periods. In this connection, we must always bear in mind that it is the welfare of the patient that we are seeking. It is for us to determine whether he is improving or declining. So I'm repeating myself because that is an important point that he is making, that as the physician, as the homeopathic practitioner, you must be able to discern the direction of the cure. The aggravation when the patient is growing actually weaker is a sure indication that the symptoms are taking on a more internal phase and the vital organs are more affected. So you see the person is weaker, even though you might not see what's going on internally, you can tell by the way they are. In other words, it is an illustration of the reversal of the order of cure. So he's talking about Herring's law, law of cure, direction of cure. In these states, the patient may sometimes declare himself better because of the absence of some trying symptoms. Yet the careful homeopathic observer will know he is worse because the natural course of cure is reversed and the disease condition is attacking more vital parts. This reminds me of Dr. Christina Chambreau, doctor of veterinary medicine, who is on the shows with me. She's done a series of shows and is back once a month. And she goes, uh-oh, every time one of her owners comes back and says, I gave the pills and immediately within the hour, all the symptoms went away. And when she hears that, she feels a caution about the direction of cure, because you want to see it unfolding backward historically. If something totally disappears immediately, then you have to be concerned, was that the correct remedy given? By these differentiations, we know whether the patient is progressing or retrogressing. In many of these cases, there is corroboration between the patient and the symptoms in the mind of the patient himself. And just insofar as there is this corroboration, the truth of his observations is valuable. We should find whether the symptoms are tending toward the exterior of the body and away from the interior parts, the inner parts. In other words, we should know whether there is a peripheral tendency or a tendency in the reverse order. Are the symptoms, is the person discharging the toxin? Do we see it coming out, or do we see it totally suppressed and perhaps internally things are now getting stirred up? The aggravation of the disease state may come from an incurable state, which is stirred to its foundations by the potentized remedy. And unless the remedy is counteracted, the disease will become worse and more rapidly approach a fatal termination. So in a previous recording with Dr. Adol, he reminded us that giving high-dose arsenicum album when the patient has a weakened vital forces, maybe nearing the end of life, it's going to progress that end of life, and we have to be cautious whether we're to use such strong remedies when the vital forces weakened. In borderline cases, cases bordering on fatal termination, the use of extremely high potencies may react on the vital energy so deeply as to cause an aggravation of the disease. Whereas a more moderate potency, say the 30th or the 200th, would not give such dangerously powerful effects. And just remember that in the previous hour, Dr. Adil recommends certain potencies for the skin eruptions, whether it is the mother tincture, which could be gently placed upon the skin, or a 6C or a 30C at the most, or even a 3C or a 6C. So using these low potencies are used in certain instances and will not give dangerously powerful effects. However, no fatal aggravation will occur unless it is already foreshadowed by the symptoms manifest in the patient. In other words, the patient is already going toward that direction of illness. They're already on their way there. And a homeopathic remedy is only going to move it in the direction, excuse me, in which the patient is already at. The potentized remedy will never produce a fatal aggravation or a destructive aggravation that would not have been possible, and even probable from the symptomatology. But it may and often does when used without discretion, speed the case to a fatal termination. In other words, a single dose of the high potency will not produce disease conditions. It has the power to develop conditions that are already present if it is used carelessly or ignorantly. Therefore, always seek a professional homeopath, a professional physician who knows how to use the high potency remedies. More careful study might reveal the indications for a less deeply acting remedy, which when administered would greatly mitigate much of the fatal suffering. So just imagine what Dr. Adel has just told us about using remedies for eruptions, that even when you think, for instance, the use of belladonna or the use of heparin would be appropriate as a simillimum, he suggests others such as Juglans and Juglans regia. I believe that's from the oak tree and can be used in mother tincture. And then he also says that when a person is immunocompromised and perhaps a diabetes patient, that the use of streptococcine would be more appropriate than the others, belladonna and heparin, or something else that you might have thought appropriate. Streptococcine would be wonderful for those types of pustules. And he recommends the use of hydrastis if you're just coming into today's show for particular skin eruptions and skin cancer. It's what he uses in his clinic. And his father is also a homeopath specializing in skin dermatology. So here, Dr. Herbert Roberts tells us that the potentized remedy will never produce a fatal aggravation or a destructive aggravation that would not have been possible or even probable from the symptomatology, but it may and often does when used without discretion to speed the case to the direction it was going, fatal termination. In other words, a single dose of a high potency will not produce disease conditions. It has the power to develop conditions that are already present if it is used carelessly or ignorantly. More careful study might reveal the indications for a less deeply acting remedy, which when administered would greatly mitigate much of the fatal suffering. You must remember that we are warned in the Organon to discern what is curative in medicine and also what is curable in disease. This point cannot be stressed too highly, that in profound states we must be very careful not to stir the vital energy to its depths. There should be more time allowed for the attempt at a gradual restoration, as there has likewise been a gradual decline. And obviously we're talking about chronic disease. Very often, less deeply acting remedies will react and palliate incurable diseases because they act more superficially. And here we're talking about palliation, which can be used homeopathically in cell salts and low doses, low potencies of these remedies. They act upon the sensorium and do not act upon the deep recesses of the vital force itself, and yet make the patient much more comfortable by relieving the symptoms annoying through the sensorium. We can know then whether changes are occurring from the depths of the vital force or whether the patient may recover. The direction taken by the symptoms is the sure indication. He constantly reminds us, look at the direction of cure and the direction in which the medicine is taking the individual and the direction of the disease. In this connection, the first observations is often a prolonged aggravation and a final decline of the patient. Now, just what happened, he asks. Possibly there has been too deep an antipsoriasis administered, and it has set in motion the vital energy and developed a destructive process. In these profound states of incurables, the vital reaction toward cure is impossible, and we can be assured that it is an incurable case. So be wary if a homeopath or physician tells you that every single case is curable or curable using homeopathy, because this is not true. If a person's pathology has gone to the destructive process, if a person's vital force is so weakened that nothing can bring it back alive, then the person is in the process of going toward demise. In such cases as these profound incurable conditions, we should avoid giving a high potency. We may be able to go on and develop the case gradually until it may possibly react favorably to a higher potency. This is well illustrated in advanced cases of tuberculosis, where it is never safe to give a very high attenuation of the exact similimum. It is probably wiser not to use an antipsoriasis in these conditions. However, this applies only to those who are profoundly ill with chronic troubles. And today we know that the strains of tuberculosis have become antibiotic resistant. New, stronger strains of tuberculosis have developed around the world and in developing countries. Therefore, take Dr. Herbert's advice of using gentle, gradual methods, low potencies, until you see the vital force is coming back alive. In cases where this is not so profound a disturbance, after the remedy has been administered, the aggravation may be long and severe, yet the final reaction and the amelioration comes. Sometimes, in these states, the aggravation may even last for weeks, so do not expect immediate results. Patience is great. Dr. Rafiq says it's like when you're fishing, that you must have patience, and the use of the placebo can be very, very helpful. In fact, placebo is now coming into use in traditional medicine as they see the benefits of this. Yet, Dr. Roberts says, yet improvement in general is continually taking place, and then comes the amelioration and slow but sure recovery, so that the second observation would be a long aggravation, but final, although slow, improvement. So this means patience from the part of the physician, patience from the part of the patient, him or herself. In these borderline cases, there has already been established some marked organic changes, and where pathological changes have actually taken place, the period of aggravation will be longer. But the general improvement in health in these curable cases will be manifest. So he's saying even when it has gone into pathology, even when you see changes to the organs, we can see slow improvement over time. Then there is another reaction, he says, where the aggravation is quick and short and strong with rapid improvement of the patient. When you find such a reaction to the remedy, you will always find rapid improvement. The reaction is vigorous, and there has been structural changes that have been of superficial nature and near the surface and not of the vital parts. Such manifestations as furunculosis or abscess formations on the surface. These are surface changes, and they are not comparable to the effects of the changes in the deeper organs, like the kidneys, the heart, or the brain. So we see the skin is our window to the internal parts of the human being. The skin is where we want to see eruptions and exposure of what's going on, just as we can look at the tongue, look at the eyes, look at the palms, look at the nails. We now can look at the skin to see what is happening. And, you know, you might question what I said earlier about Dr. Christina Chambrow saying she worries when she hears from the patient, from the owner of the animal, that all the symptoms just disappeared and the patient is, you know, the animal is in this state. Then she worries because here he is saying, Dr. Roberts is saying, the reaction is quick, strong, and short with rapid improvement of the patient, meaning that you do see improvement on all levels, spiritual, emotional, mental, physical. You see improvement. You don't just see the symptoms, the physical manifestation of the disease going away. But if that animal, whether it is a dog or a human, becomes more irritable, more violent, more angry, inability to sleep when all of the symptoms, the manifest physical symptoms disappear, we know that's the wrong direction. We want the human or the living organism to be more free, to be able to be gentler and act with compassion in the world rather than have other kinds of manifestations emotionally going toward disease in those parts. What does he say? Dr. Herbert Roberts says it is well to take note of the difference between organ changes that take place in the vital organs that sustain the economy, which we cannot do without, and those that take place in the less vital parts of the body and are not vital to life itself. An aggravation that is quick, short, and strong is to be desired because we know that improvement will be rapid. And these types of cases usually happen when a person has a strong vital force. Again, there is another class of indications where we find no aggravation whatsoever. There is no organic change. There is no tendency to organic disease. The chronic condition causes disturbances to which the remedy is applicable but is not of very great depth. It belongs to the functional conditions, exhibiting its effects in the nervous manifestations and the relations of the patient to his surroundings and to tissue changes. There are changes in the vital force that are so profound as to cause many symptoms that are very trying to the patient, and yet so slight that with all the instruments of precision, we do not observe any pathological changes. So here we're seeing, I think what he's saying is we're seeing that the patient is indicating something is happening. It is their sensations. They say, my skin itches here, and they're scratching, 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 and you see nothing as a physician. You take lab tests, you take a scraping of the skin, and you still see nothing, yet the patient is indicating that there is an itch. Something is happening here. It is in these conditions that we sometimes get considerable suffering, says Dr. Herbert Roberts, yet cures will come without any aggravation. In these cases, the single remedy in a moderate potency, say 200 C potency, will probably complete the work. In such cases, we know the potency and the remedy are correct. So if you have the similimum, if you have the remedy that is precisely on target and is going to cover the patient's symptoms, and you give in this moderate potency, he considers a 200 C potency, centesimal scale, then you're not going to see an aggravation. Rather, you're going to see an amelioration of the symptoms that the person is having. Then, he says, we must have cases with amelioration coming first and aggravation coming afterward. Isn't this strange? This amelioration comes on to last usually for 3 or 4 days. The patient seems to be better, but at the end of a week or 10 days, all the symptoms are worse than when he first came to you. Okay, this is something that we talk about in homeopathy quite a bit, and you do want to check in to your patient after 7 to 10 days to see how they're doing. Initially, they may be feeling great. Their amelioration is coming quickly, that it happens in 3 to 4 days, but then what's going on after 7 to 10 days? This is probably a universal cycle of healing. These are usually cases that have a great many symptoms. We find that in spite of what we thought at first was a favorable reaction, the ultimate condition is unfavorable. Either the homeopath selected too superficial a remedy that could act only as a palliative, or the case is incurable and the remedy has been somewhat similar but not completely similar. In order to determine the cause of the reaction, we must examine the patient and find out whether the symptoms related to the remedy or to the disease. Sometimes you will find the remedy was in error. So be careful. If you give a remedy that you think is correct and you see an immediate improvement, it sounds kind of like Dr. Christina Schoenbrough was saying, you see this immediate improvement, but then 7 to 10 days later, everything is coming back full force. You know the remedy was an error. You will usually find in these cases that the remedy was similar to the most pronounced symptoms, but it did not cover the whole case. Therefore, it did not strike at the constitutional state of the patient. Here, in evaluating the symptoms, we miss the essential concomitants. And Dr. Herbert Roberts loves concomitants, things that are occurring simultaneously in the patient, things that are happening, symptoms that are happening at the same time. We based our prescription only on the generals. Of course, Dr. Herbert Roberts loves generals. Boninghausen loves generals. These are symptoms that are occurring throughout the patient, in both locals and throughout the patient, mentals, emotionals, everything. So if you base only on generals without the concomitants, then you might be missing the similimum, the exact right-on remedy. It may be that we have an incurable patient, so remember that. You know, you can do as much as you can do, but if the vital force is weak, then you're only going to be able to palliate. It will be fortunate for such cases if the symptoms come back exactly as they were when you first saw the case, but the symptoms often come back changed. So here he's making a big point. You're lucky if the symptoms return exactly as they were, because then you can start fresh again. But if the symptoms come back changed, you know that something has changed due to the remedy. Then we must wait. And in this, we'll require patience on the part of the physician and cooperation on the part of the patient. Here, the waiting is so important. It may be necessary to take the patient into your confidence if he evinces sufficient intelligence to warrant it. So here, this is based on the relationship of the physician, the homeopath, to the patient, to the client, that you are working in partnership, that the patient trusts your judgment, that the patient trusts in the remedies and is willing to forego a little bit more length of time and suffering to find a better remedy. Dr. Herbert Roberts states, the higher potencies will set in motion in the vital force curative functions, which will act a long time. Because oftentimes in these chronic conditions, it takes a long time to establish order. And the vital energy takes its own time to cure. During these process, no medicine should be given. So this is in a time where vital forces of the individuals may be strong, yet the person is in a chronic condition over a long period of time, maybe a lifetime or decades in years. And the amount of time that it took to get to this point means that it's going to take a slow resolution toward the direction of cure. And we must instill patience by giving the remedy, he's saying, in a high potency. It's going to set that vital force, the secondary reaction, into motion. And in this case, either placebo might be given or just word therapy, talk therapy, encouragement to let them know to wait it out. It's going to take time. In cases that are proceeding to a perfect cure, says Dr. Herbert Roberts, if the improvement continues for some time and then suddenly comes to a halt, find out if the patient has been doing something that is against the rules of health or has interfered with the continuation of the curative action of the remedy. This will often be found to be the cause of too short a period of relief from the symptoms. So you're checking in with the patient every 7 to 10 days, and you saw that you were moving toward cure, you were moving toward improvement for some time, and then all of a sudden the remedy stops working or the patient starts backtracking or not feeling well, having complaints. What do? You have to do some talking. You have to do some observation. Did the person go to the dentist and have a root canal, have drilling? Did that stop the process of the remedy working in the person? What else could have stop the remedy from working? Maybe the person started to put on a cortisone cream. Maybe this person started to eat something that was disagreeing with the individual, or eating tainted food, or having even an emotional upset. Maybe something happened profoundly. Maybe they saw that meteor come through the atmosphere and they thought the world was coming to an end, or there was a bomb. Who knows what it could be, but there's a shock to the system, this could stop the remedy from acting. So what does he say to do at this point? In the third observation, you will remember there was a quick aggravation followed by a long amelioration. Note the difference here. You have just considered the amelioration that was of too short duration. So now he's talking about the third observation, quick aggravation, long amelioration, which is different from what he was saying, an amelioration and then an aggravation. So you can see what is happening. Pay attention and observe. You have just considered the amelioration that was of too short duration. In instances where you have an aggravation immediately after the administration of the remedy and then a quick rebound, you never see too short amelioration of the remedy. If there is a quick rebound, the amelioration should last. If it does not last, it is because of some condition that interferes with the action of the remedy. It may be something that the patient is doing entirely unconsciously, or it may be something that he is doing deliberately and intentionally. Do you know people who put Vicks VapoRub on their body, up their nose, and it's full of camphor, which might be an antidote to the remedy? I know plenty of people over time in past generations who use the Vicks VapoRub as a liniment on their body. Even nightly, they would put on this cream. A quick rebound means everything to the case. It means that the remedy is well chosen, that it covers the condition of the vital economy. And if everything goes without interference, it will bring ultimate recovery. There is this to remember. Some remedies have an aggravation immediately after administration, and some have a sharp aggravation some little time after administration. For instance, the remedy phosphorus may have a sharp aggravation, but it rarely occurs under 24 hours after administration. And it may be 48 hours or longer, and it may last for some little time. So you have to know how the remedies work and what types of reactions and responses you're supposed to see. And if you see a sharp aggravation from phosphorus, that occurs immediately but not after a day or two, then something is not exactly right. A word about the acute condition, acute cases and conditions where you get a quick rebound and amelioration lasting for a few hours, only to have another aggravation when the action of the remedy on the vital force is exhausted. The action of the remedy is much more quickly exhausted in the rapid pace of acute diseases than in the more moderate progress of chronic manifestations, and more frequent repetitions of the remedy may be demanded. The most satisfactory amelioration in acute cases is where amelioration comes gradually and takes an hour or two after the administration of the remedy before it is markedly manifest. Okay, so he's now comparing acute cases to chronic cases and the action of the remedy in both of these situations, that yes, you will see a quick rebound in an acute situation that lasts for a few hours, but then you have an aggravation again. So that means that the remedy needs to be repeated. It only was able to resolve that amount of the illness in this acute condition. Acute condition comes on quickly, swiftly, very forcefully, and the patient typically will recover or go into a chronic state. So we want the acute condition to recover with the use of either loving care and or some baths that you know of, hydrotherapy, sunlight, other kinds of things, and or the necessity for a homeopathic remedy. So what is he saying here? It comes on quickly. We have an acute, a rapid response, but then the aggravation, so you need to repeat the remedy. But if you see that the remedy works in an hour or two after administration, you're going to see a long-term healing occur, more marked healing manifest. If amelioration, he says, is too short in chronic diseases, it means that structural changes are taking place, pathological changes, and have destroyed or threatened to destroy the proper functions of the patient. So you get an amelioration in the chronic situation, but it's not lasting very long because there's pathology going on. It takes close observation to discern these changes from the reaction of the remedy. However, one may acquire much help from careful observation of these indications in detecting the course and progress of the case. He's always telling, look at the direction of cure. Once in a great while, you will find a full period of amelioration of the symptoms, yet no special relief of the patient. This you will encounter in cases where you have structural changes, where the patient will improve on the remedy for some time and then improvement will cease. They can improve only to a certain point and then improvement can go no further. We meet these conditions where organs like the liver or the kidneys are partially involved and can function only in part. The remedy may keep the patient comfortable, however, and by careful repetitions of the remedy at infrequent, not frequent intervals, the patient may be kept comfortable for a considerable period of time, even though you will not be justified in expecting a cure. So these are patients, chronic disease, that have deep-seated problems in vital organs like the liver, the kidneys, the brain, the heart, and you can palliate. There is another reaction that we find in some patients, and that is purely hysterical. And in the previous hour of today's show, Dr. Adil Chimthalawala Kasim mentioned the remedy valerian root, valeriana. They seem to approve any remedy you may give them and get an aggravation from it. This may be because of an idiosyncrasy for the remedy or because of too sensitive reaction of the vital energy. It may be almost impossible to do anything with them in a curative way, but it may be of inestimable help improving a remedy. So we're talking about people who are very sensitive to all of the homeopathic drugs and remedies, and every time they take anything, they start to have symptoms. In this case, provings or clinical trials or finding out what the action of the remedy, the medicines are for people is very helpful. You journal these down and use them in future cases. Before a remedy is used, the constitutional condition of the patient should be very carefully noted. Write down the peculiarities of the patient in as much detail as possible, and then these observations should be deducted from the proving. So here in the middle of his talk today about remedy reaction, he's teaching something to us about taking up case or doing provings and realizing that the person who is hypersensitive to all of these drugs, you need to take a constitutional analysis first to know what is their normal state of being so that you can discern and take cross those symptoms off of the provings symptomatology. In a case where the symptoms found by careful questioning seem to be entirely adequate to cover the case and to warrant a good selection of the similimum, we may note a reaction where a great number of symptoms appear after the administration of the remedy. If these are a return of former symptoms that have been forgotten, it is an indication that we are on the right road to recovery. And it is a truly homeopathic reaction. Old symptoms reappearing, we know to be a step in the right direction of cure. Cure, and this is in bold letters, cure takes place from within outward, from above downward, from the important organs to the less important organs, and symptoms disappear in the reverse order of their appearance. And so he says that in your questioning, and you find out after giving a similimum, the reaction is a great number of symptoms appear after you give the remedy. But these are a return of former symptoms that the person had previously forgotten. Similarly, you might think about an asthmatic who then the lungs are improved, yet the skin starts to break out with eczema. These two types of diseases are closely connected. Recommend that the person does not try to cover up the eczema at this point, as the person's disease is going back to the old appearance of original symptoms. And that is the body throwing out to the skin, the disease. If, however, says Dr. Roberts, these are actually a number of new symptoms, it is an unfavorable sign. Old symptoms reappearing are a step in the right direction, as we know. Therefore, a group of entirely new symptoms appearing after the administration of a remedy is evidence that we have made a decided step in the wrong direction. We have probably mixed the case. So new symptoms, this is not good because this is something brand new to the patient and not part of the condition, the disease, and where you want to go. We occasionally find another class of reactions after the administration of the remedy. In these cases too, we find the appearance of new symptoms after the administration of the remedy, but in the first place, these cases offered few symptoms for an adequate prescription. It is usually possible to get a complete symptomatic picture of the case if we take the necessary amount of care in taking the case, but we do occasionally meet cases where there is little presented in the way of symptoms, or the symptoms presented have little in the way of modifications as to modalities and concomitants upon which to base a satisfactory analysis of the case. And he's referring now to Hahnemann, Samuel Hahnemann in Organon of Medicine, paragraphs 172 to 182, where he talks about what to do when you have a person coming in with so few symptoms that it's very difficult to base the case on a similimum. It's hard to find a remedy. In these conditions, where even the most careful case-taking fails to reveal an adequate basis for the prescription of the similimum, we may yet find that if the few symptoms are sufficiently well marked, a remedy may be selected which will either eliminate the marked symptoms found in the first condition consideration of the case with consequent general improvement, or there will be a development of more symptoms. Okay, in this case, the development of more new symptoms means that you have more to base your prescription on as a homeopathic physician. You can now retake the case with the new symptoms and then reselect a more appropriate similimum similar remedy. Dr. Roberts says, if there has been a general improvement, the first remedy was homeopathic to the case and not alone to the few symptoms presented on our first consideration. In the second instance, the first remedy was probably one of a group of similars, and it has served to bring to light the other formerly hidden symptoms, which were a definite part of the case. So basically he's saying there were symptoms that were not fully observable, and by giving the remedy that was not perfectly similar, we're able to bring out from the vital force these hidden symptoms to unfold. It has unfolded the case to us. In this instance, then, the closely related remedies to the one first administered will probably contain among them the similimum, which will be the remedy to cover and assist most in curing the complete case. Even in these observations, we must be very careful to consider whether we have administered a similar remedy that has unfolded the case to us, or whether our selection has been so far from the similar that we have merely mixed the case. Mixing the case means that you brought out symptoms that don't really belong to either the similar remedies or to the disease of that patient. And so you've mixed it up, and basically you're going to have to wait that out. Maybe you will have to antidote that remedy. Let's see what else Dr. Herbert Roberts says. Disease states are progressive, ever developing deeper and deeper manifestations. Disease is destructive. Cure is constructive development. Cure is always centrifugal, as growth is always centrifugal, circular in motion. And here we are very highly receptive and remembering Grant Bentley, who does homeopathic facial analysis and teaches us the directions of cure and the directions of disease and the directions of response reactions from all individuals, that they are either throwing it out from the body, bringing it into the body, but the centrifugal action is always a part of growth. You can see it in a way when you look at a little sprout coming up from the ground from a seed. The centrifugal action in the slow motion movie pictures, that it doesn't appear on a momentary basis, but you see the spiraling of the plant moving up toward the sun. And we are always in a pattern of growth. By careful observation of the symptoms, before selecting the remedy, and by careful observation of the reaction after the administration of the remedy, we may have the assurance that comes from intelligent comprehension of our work, and we can know when we are making satisfactory progress in each individual case. This has been a very in-depth article, chapter 19 in The Principles and Art of Cure by Homeopathy, written by Dr. Herbert Roberts, MD. The title of the chapter is Remedy Reaction. These are the things that every homeopath must discern and know. He has given us all of the different types of reactions that a person may exhibit once given a remedy, whether it is the Trucemilimum or if it is not the Trucemilimum, whether the patient is curable, whether the patient is incurable, does not have the energy within the vital force, all sorts of different responses and reactions. This is probably worth listening to again, reading again. At the end of every one of his chapters, he provides for us questions, like a checklist to see what you learned. What is the most necessary attribute of the homeopathic physician? He asks, what does a physician need, his most important attribute? The answer is his sense of perception, his sense of observation, and his knowledge about the actions of the medicine and the reactions and responses of the patient. What are we to expect after the administration of the remedy? Are we supposed to expect a slight aggravation? Are we supposed to expect an immediate amelioration? Go back and listen again. What are the most common reactions? The answers are either the patient is going to get worse or the patient is going to get better, right? The common reactions are going to be an aggravation, an intense aggravation, or a slow aggravation, or an amelioration, either quick or slow. What do we infer when the patient feels better, but the symptoms are worse? What do we say? Remember, symptoms are worse. These are not new symptoms. These are just an intensity of the symptoms already, but the patient feels better. And maybe, you know, they now have an appetite, or the fogginess has left. In a way, the symptoms have improved, have they not? Maybe on the spiritual, emotional, mental plane, the symptoms have improved, but on the physical plane, the symptoms seem to be worse. Maybe there's more of an outbreak of those chickenpox or that acne, but usually it is short-lived. Be patient. What do we infer when the patient is weaker, but the symptoms are better? Patient is weaker. Symptoms are better. Not a good sign, is it? We want the patient to be stronger. We want health. When there is actual aggravation of the disease state after the administration of the Similimum, what is our prognosis? What do you determine about this remedy reaction? Aggravation of the disease state. It's good. It touched on the Similimum, did it not? Now you have to be observant and follow what happens next. Does the homeopathic remedy ever produce a fatal aggravation? If there has been no such indication present before, the answer is no. The only way that a fatal aggravation can occur is if the patient is already in the destructive direction. They're already on their way to that state of being or non-being. When actual aggravation of the disease state gives a prognosis of a deep-acting disease after a deep-acting remedy has been administered, what can we do to help the patient? The answer is, sometimes a complementary remedy of less depth of action will actually assist the patient to a place where cure may be carried out by the deep-acting Similimum. or it would surely palliate the dangerous and distressing symptoms if no cure were possible. So you might need to give another remedy. What is the sure guide for our prognosis? What are the guide? What are your guiding lines? That would be all of those black letter direction of cure, Herring's law, the words that the cure takes place from within outward, from above downward, from the important organs to the less important organs, from the symptoms disappearing in the reverse order. Those are sure guidelines for the prognosis. What is the most desirable reaction after administration? The most desirable is a short, quick, strong aggravation with closely following amelioration and recession of the symptoms in the order of cure. And remember, I think maybe this is without using the LM potencies, the liquid water dosing, because with that you might alleviate any aggravations. What do we infer when we find a strong amelioration and then a worsening of symptoms? That wasn't right, was it, either? Well, if it's an acute situation and you get a strong amelioration and then an aggravation, that means that the remedy didn't last very long and you now have to repeat it again. But it also means that the vital force was not strong enough to hold on to that remedy. In case seemingly proceeding to a perfect cure, when amelioration comes suddenly to a halt, what is the next step? The answer is find out if the patient is doing something to interfere with the action of the remedy or if it is just a cycle of the disease symptoms. What is the difference between an aggravation occurring immediately after the administration of the remedy and one occurring 2 to 3 days after its administration? What is the difference? Immediate amelioration or 2 to 3 days after administration? Remember, he talked about that. Go back and listen. If we find too short an amelioration after administration of the remedy in chronic disease, what is our prognosis? Finding too short of an amelioration after administration, then the patient's vital force was not strong enough to throw off the disease. You might have to do some palliation or give what he said was that second remedy to bring comfort to the patient. What do we infer from the patient who seems to prove any remedy that may be given? That is the person who is highly sensitive to everything and may be very useful in doing provings, homeopathic provings. If many symptoms appear after the administration of the remedy, what must we consider? Many symptoms appear after the administration of the remedy. That might mean, depending on what kind of symptoms are appearing. We have a few more questions, and we're at the end of the show. Time is really run out. How do you know that the remedy has acted? What is the first indication of it? Well, first indication is the person feels better mentally, emotionally, spiritually. You know, that we know that the remedy has acted. What is the prognosis of the aggravation of the symptoms? Prognosis of the aggravation of the symptoms. Well, if it's an intense aggravation, we know that the vital force is kicked into gear and the secondary reactions are occurring, and this is a good prognosis. What is the prognosis of the amelioration of the symptoms, but the patient doesn't feel well? Not good sign, because we need the patient to feel well. That's the most important thing. That's aphorism number one. Can you always depend upon what the patient says? No, you can't. You have to be your... He said that the best homeopath is one who is perceptive. In case of aggravation and the patient is actually growing weaker, what does this indicate? A weaker patient is not a good sign. It's in the destructive phase of the disease. When the patient feels better but is growing weaker, what does this indicate? He says it's the reversal of the order of cure. Symptoms are taking on a deeper form, although there may be actual amelioration of the more noticeable symptoms. Why do we have to observe closely the natural course of cure after the remedy has been administered? observe the closely the natural course of cure, the direction of cure. Does this take precedent over what the patient tells us of the opinion he holds as to his improvement or less in condition and why? Because sometimes the patient might see an outbreak of the acne or the symptom physically, and they might be feeling better all over holistically in every other way, and they might be concerned. You have to alleviate their concern that this is a direction of cure going back in history to make the patient trust your judgment and your perception and your experience. And our show has ended today. Come back tomorrow at 1 p.m. in the afternoon with, we will have Alan Phillips, and I will be talking about skin, mind, body connection.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.